And land on Bishop's Hill? That's right, to Marcus. I think Marcus wants to build himself some houses up there. Build a little... I don't remember what he calls it.
Lindsay half closed her eyes and sighed.
A subdivision? She asked. That's right, subdivision. Up there on the hill, I guess. Nice views, anyway.
Lindsay became quiet after that, her big eyes staring off into the distance at the fields behind the nursing home. Colin sat there and listened to the old folks talking, and then finally Lindsay grabbed his arm just above the elbow and said,
"We should get going."
As soon as the hearse's doors were shut, Lindsay mumbled as if to herself,
"Mom would never sell land. Never. Why is she doing that?"
It occurred to Colin that he'd never before heard Lindsay refer to Hollis as Mom.
Why would she sell land to that guy?
Maybe she needs money, Colin offered.
She needs money like I need a goddamn hole in my head. My great-grandfather built that factory, Dr. Fred N. Dinsenfar. We aren't hurting for money, I promise you.
Was he Arab?
What?
Dinsenfar.
No, he wasn't Arab. He was from Germany or something. Anyway, he spoke German. So does Hollis. That's how I know it. Why do you always ask such ridiculous questions?
Geez. Sorry.
Oh, whatever. I'm just confused. Who cares? On to other things. It's fun hanging out with the oldsters, isn't it? You wouldn't think it, but they're cool as hell. I used to visit those people at their houses. Most of them weren't in the home then. Almost every day. I'd just go from house to house getting fed and getting hugged on. Those were the pre-friend days.
They certainly seemed to adore you, Colin said.
Me? The ladies couldn't talk about anything but how hot you were. You're missing a whole demographic of Catherine's by not chasing the over-80 market.
It's funny how they thought we were dating, Colin said, glancing over at her.
How's that funny? She asked, holding his gaze.
He said. Distracted from the road, Colin watched as she gave him the slightest version of her inimitable smile. Chapter 13. That Sunday, Hassan went cruising with Lindsay and Katrina and Tok and Jat and Sokht. The next night, he went cruising again and came home after midnight to find Colin working on his theorem, which now worked 17 of 19 times. He still couldn't get it to work for either Catherine the Third or, more importantly, Catherine the 19th.
"Sup?" asked Hassan.
"Sup is not a word," answered Colin without looking up.
"You're like sunshine on a cloudy day, Singleton. When it's cold outside, you're the month of May."
"I'm working," Colin said. He couldn't quite pinpoint when Hassan had started to become like everyone else on the planet, but it was clearly happening, and it was clearly annoying.
"I kissed Katrina," Hassan said.
And then Colin put his pencil down and turned around in his chair and said,
"You whatted who?" "Whatted isn't a word," mimicked Hassan. "On the lips?" "No, dumbass, on her pupillary sphincter, yes, on the lips."
"Why?"
"We were sitting in the back of Colin's truck, and we were spinning this beer bottle, but it was bumpy as hell because we were riding up to this place in the woods. And so someone would spin the beer bottle, and it'd fly way the hell up and land on the other side of the truck bed, so no one was kissing anyone. So I figured it was safe to play, right? But then I spin the bottle, and I swear to God, it just spun in the tightest little circle, even though we were still going over these bumps. I mean, only God could have kept that bottle from jumping into the air. And then it stopped right in front of Katrina, and she said, 'Lucky me.' And she wasn't even being sarcastic, Kafir. She was serious. She leaned across the truck, and we hit a bump, and she just sort of landed in my arms. And then she made a beeline from my mouth, and I swear to God, her tongue was like licking my teeth."
Colin just stared, incredulous. He wondered whether Hassan was making it up.
"It was weird and wet and messy, but fun, I guess. The best part was having my hand on her face and looking down at her and seeing her eyes closed. I guess she's a chubby chaser or something. Anyway, I'm taking her to the Taco Hell tomorrow night. She's picking me up. That's how I roll, baby."
Hassan smirked.
"The ladies come to Big Daddy, 'cause Big Daddy ain't got no car."
"You're serious," said Colin.
I'm serious.
Wait, you think the bottle staying still in the truck was a miracle? Hassan nodded. Colin tapped his pencil eraser against the desk and then stood up. And God wouldn't lead you to kiss a girl unless you were supposed to marry her. So God wants you to marry the girl who believed I was a Frenchman suffering from hemorrhoidal Tourette's?
Don't be an asshole, Hassan said, almost threateningly.
I'm just surprised that Mr. High and Mighty Religious is fugging around with girls in the back of a pickup truck, that's all. You were probably drinking shitty beer and wearing a football jersey.
What the fuck, dude? I kissed a girl! Finally, a really hot, really sweet girl! Dingleberries! Stop pushing it!
Colin didn't know why, but he felt compelled to keep pushing it.
Whatever. I just can't believe you made out with Katrina. Is she just not as dumb and ditzy as she seemed that day?
And then Hassan reached out and grabbed a handful of Colin's Jufro. He pulled Colin across the room by the hair and then pushed him up against the wall. Hassan's jaw was clenched tight as he pressed into Colin's solar plexus, the precise location of the hole in Colin's gut.
I said dingleberries, Kafir! You will respect the goddamn dingleberries! Now, I'm going to bed before we get into a fight, and you want to know why I don't want to fight you? Because I'd lose.
Still joking, Colin thought. He's always joking, even when he's furious. And as Hassan made his way through the bathroom toward his room, and Colin sat back down to work at the theorem, Colin's face was bright and wet, the tears coming from frustration. Colin hated not being able to accomplish his markers. He'd hated it since he was 4, and his dad set learning the Latin conjugations for 25 irregular verbs as a daily marker, but by the end of the day, Colin only knew 23. His dad didn't chastise him, but Colin knew he'd failed. And now, the markers were more complicated maybe, but they were still pretty simple. He wanted a best friend, a Catherine, and a theorem. And after almost 3 weeks in Gutshot, it seemed he was becoming worse off than when he'd started. Hassan and Colin managed not to speak the next morning. Not once. And it was clear to Colin that Hassan still felt just as pissed off as Colin did. Colin watched in a lock-jawed silence as Hassan furiously stabbed at his breakfast, and later, as Hassan slammed the mini-recorder down on the coffee table of some factory retiree who was old but not old enough for the nursing home. Colin could hear the annoyance in Hassan's voice as he asked, in the monotone of the aggressively bored, what life had been like in Gutshot when the oldster was a kid. By now, it seemed, they'd run through the best storytellers and were left with people who took 5 minutes deciding whether they visited Asheville, North Carolina in June or July of 1961. Colin still paid attention. It was, after all, what he did. But much of his brain power was elsewhere. Mostly, he cataloged all the times Hassan had been an ass to him, all the times he'd been the butt of Hassan's jokes, all the snide little comments Hassan had made about his Catherine-ing. And now that Hassan was Katrina-ing, he'd become the kind of guy who cruises, leaving Colin behind. Lindsay skipped that day to hang out with Tak at the store. So it was just Colin and Hassan and one single oldster who monopolized their entire day. Although the old man talked for 7 hours almost without ceasing, Colin's world felt eerily quiet, until he finally gave in as they left the old man's house to go pick up Lindsay. This sounds trite, but I just think you've changed, Colin said as they walked down the oldster's driveway. And I'm tired of you hanging out with me only so you can make fun of me. Hassan said nothing in response, just climbed into the passenger seat and slammed the door shut. Colin got in and started the car, and then Hassan lost it.
Has it ever crossed your mind, you ungrateful asshole, that when I was mopping up after all your breakups, when I was picking your sorry ass off the floor of your bedroom, when I was listening to your endless rantings and ravings about every fucking girl who ever gave you the time of day, that maybe I was actually doing it for you, and not because I'm oh so desperate to learn of the newest dumping in your life? What problems have you listened to of mine, Dillhole? Have you ever sat with me for hours and listened to me whine about being a fat fugger whose best friend ditches him every time a Catherine comes along? Has it ever occurred to you, even for the briefest goddamn moment, that my life might be as bad as yours? Imagine if you weren't a fucking genius, and you were lonely, and nobody ever listened to you. So, yeah, kill me. I kissed a girl. And I came home with that story psyched to tell you, because I finally got a story of my own after 4 years of listening to yours. And you're such a self-involved asshole, you can't for one fucking second realize that my life doesn't spin around the star of Colin Singleton.
Hassan paused for breath, and Colin mentioned the thing that had been bugging him most all day. "You called him Colin," said Colin.
"Do you know what your problem is?" Hassan went on, not listening. "You can't live with the idea that someone might leave. So instead of being happy for me, like any normal person, you're pissed off because, oh no, Hassan doesn't like me anymore. You're such a sitzpinkler. You're so goddamn scared of the idea that someone might dump you that your whole fucking life is built around not getting left behind. Well, it doesn't work, Kafir. It's not just dumb, it's ineffective. Because then you're not being a good friend or a good boyfriend or whatever, because you're only thinking, they might not like me, they might not like me. And guess what? When you act like that, no one likes you. There's your goddamn theorem."
"You called him Colin," repeated Colin, his voice catching now.
"Called who Colin? Talk."
"No." Colin nodded.
"Did I?"
Colin nodded.
"You're sure?" "Right, of course you're sure."
"Huh. Well, I'm sorry. That was an asshole move on my part."
Colin turned into the store's parking lot and stopped the car, but made no move to get out.
"I know you're right. I mean, about me being a self-centered asshole."
"Well, it's only sometimes. But still, just stop."
"I don't really know how," he said. "How do you just stop being terrified of getting left behind and ending up by yourself forever and not meaning anything to the world?"
"You're pretty fucking smart," Hassan answered. "I'm sure you can figure something out."
"It's great," Colin said after a while. "About Katrina, I mean. You fucking kissed a girl.
A girl!
I mean, I always sort of thought you were gay," Colin acknowledged.
"I might be gay if I had a better-looking best friend," said Hassan.
"And I might be gay if I could locate your penis under the fat rolls."
"Bitch, I could gain 500 pounds and you could still see Thunderstick hanging to my knees."
Colin smiled. "She's a lucky girl."
"Too bad she'll never know just how lucky unless we get married."
And then Colin was back on the subject. "You are sort of a dick to me sometimes."
"It would be easier if you acted like you actually didn't hate me."
"Dude, do you want me to sit here and say that you're my best friend and I love you and you're such a genius that I just want to cuddle up to you at night? Because I'm just not going to. That's sitzpinklery. But I do think you're a genius. No shit, I honestly do. I think you can do whatever the fuck you want to do in your life, and that's a pretty sweet gig."
"Thanks,"
said Colin. And then they got out of the car, and they met in front of the hood, and Colin held his arms out a little, and Hassan shoved him playfully, and then they hustled into the store. Tak was restocking some beef jerky sticks, while Lindsay sat on the stool behind the counter reading a celebrity magazine, her bare feet up on the counter beside the cash register.
"Hey," Tak said, "heard you got a date tonight, big guy."
"Yeah, and it's all thanks to your excellent driving. If you'd missed that pothole, she never would have ended up in my arms."
"Well, you're welcome. She's a hottie, ain't she?"
"Hey," said Lindsay without looking up from her magazine, "I'm the hottie."
"Oh, baby, hush," Tak said.
"So, Colin," said Tak, "Haas says you aren't much for cruising, but you gotta come out hunting with us next weekend."
"That's nice of you to offer," Colin said. And it was sort of nice.
No quarterback or cornerback or anyone else in any way associated with football had ever invited him to do anything. But Colin thought immediately of the reason he chose Catherine the 19th over Marie Caravoli. In this world, Colin figured, you're best off staying with your kind.
"I don't know how to shoot, though." "Oh, I bet you'll bag a hogzilla," said Tak.
Colin glanced over at Hassan, who opened his eyes wide and nodded subtly. For a split second, Colin thought of passing on the hog hunt, but he figured he owed it to Hassan. Part of not being a self-centered asshole, Colin reasoned, is doing things with your friends even when you don't want to. Even if they could result in the death of a wild hog. Okay, Colin said, looking not at Tok, but at Haas. And Tok said,
sounds good. Listen, since y'all was here to look after the store till closing, I'm gonna head off. I gotta meet the boys down at the factory. We're going bowling.
Now Lindsay put down the magazine.
I like bowling, she said.
Boys' night out, baby.
Lindsay fake pouted, then smiled and stood up to kiss Tok goodbye. He leaned across the counter, pecked her on the mouth, and strode out. They closed up the store early and went home, even though Hollis did not like to be interrupted before 5:30. She was lying on the couch in the living room saying,
"We need your help here. If you look at the price point,"
and then saw them walking in and said,
"I need to call you back."
She hung up the phone.
"Now, I've told y'all I work until 5:30 and I can't be interrupted. Hollis, why are you selling land to that guy Marcus?" "That's none of your business, and I'll thank you not to try and change the subject. Y'all stay out of the house until 5:30. I'm paying you to work, remember? And Lindsay Lee Wells, I know you weren't down at Mr. Jaffrey's house today. Don't think I don't find these things out."
"I've got a date tonight, so I'll be skipping dinner," Hassan interjected.
"And I'm taking Colin to dinner," Lindsay said.
"This Colin," she clarified, her extended pointer finger poking his bicep. Hollis beamed. Colin looked over at Lindsay with equal parts surprise and confusion.
"Well, I guess I can do some work this evening with y'all out, then," Hollis said.
Colin spent his remaining pre-date hours working on the theorem. Within 30 minutes, he'd nailed K-19. The problem, as it turned out, was not so much bad math as false hope. Colin had been trying to tweak the theorem to make K-19's graph look like a short, steep upward slope followed by a long, slowly descending series of small ups and downs that eventually dipped suddenly below the x-axis and then curved sharply above it. In short, he had been counting upon a reunion. He'd been assuming that the theorem could see into the future when K-19 would return to him, but the theorem, he decided, couldn't take into account its own influence. So then, with the same formula he'd worked out before in the car with Lindsay, Colin managed to get it to reflect his relationship with Catherine the 19th up until now. It was the same sharp upslope, followed by the long series of ups and downs, but without the final curve above the x-axis. By 5 o'clock, he was perilously close. He had captured the Catherine roller coaster 18 times, but what he hadn't done was quite important. He hadn't gotten Catherine the 3rd on paper. And one cannot take an equation that predicts 18 out of 19 Catherines to the Nobel Prize Committee. Although there's not a Nobel Prize in mathematics, he might have had an outside chance at the Peace Prize. For the next 2 hours, he thought of every facet of Catherine the 3rd, given name Catherine Mutzensberger, with the precision and clarity that made his brain so unusual. And yet, he could not fix what he came to call the 3 anomaly. The equation that correctly predicted the other 18 came out looking like a U that bottomed out just to the right of the y-axis and flattened out slightly as it crossed the x-axis on the right. The graph's smiley-facedness indicated that Colin had not been dumped by 3, but had dumped her, which was ludicrous. He could remember everything about Catherine the 3rd, and the rest of them too, of course. He remembered everything about everything, yet something about Catherine the 3rd clearly eluded him. As he worked on the theorem, Colin was so focused that the world outside his notebook seemed not to exist, so he jolted upright in surprise when he heard from behind him Lindsay say, "Time for dinner, dude." He turned around to see her head peeking through the open door. She wore a blue cotton tank top with tight blue jeans, Converse All-Stars, and, as if she knew what he liked, no makeup. She looked, well, pretty, even not smiling. Colin glanced down at his jeans and yellow Cranial Kids t-shirt. "Don't dress up on account of me," Lindsay said, smiling. "We gotta get going anyway." They came downstairs just in time to look through the screen door and see Hassan get into Katrina's SUV. Hassan handed her a sagging pink rose he'd plucked from the mansion's garden. She smiled, and then they kissed. Lord, Colin had seen it with his own eyes. Hassan kissing a girl who had to have been homecoming queen.
Was Katrina homecoming queen?
No, I was, Lindsay responded immediately.
Really?
Lindsay pursed her lips.
Well, no, but you don't have to sound so surprised about it. Katrina was on the court, though.
She stopped and shouted toward the kitchen,
Hey, Hollis, we're leaving. We might be back late, hot sex and all.
Have fun, replied Hollis. Call if you'll be out past 12.
They drove downtown to the gas station Taco Hell, where they ordered at the drive-thru. They both peered through the accordion window, Lindsay leaning over Colin to catch a glimpse of Hassan and Katrina eating.
She seems to really like him, Lindsay said. I mean, I really like him too. I don't want to sound mean. I'm just surprised. She usually goes for, the dumb hot ones.
So she's like you.
Watch it. I'm paying for your dinner after all.
They took their chicken soft tacos and drove off, and finally, Colin decided to ask what was going on.
Why are we going out for dinner together?
Well, three reasons. First, because I've been thinking about our theorem, and I have a question. How does it work if you're gay?
Huh?
Well, it's all graph going up means boy dumps girl, and graph going down means girl dumps boy, right? But what if they're both boys?
It doesn't matter. You just assign a position to each person. Instead of being B and G, it could just as easily be B1 and B2. That's how algebra works.
Which would explain my C-. Okay. Thank God. I was really worried that it would only help the straights, and that's not much of a theorem. Reason two is, I'm trying to get Hollis to like me, and she likes you, so if I like you, she'll like me.
Colin was looking at her, confused.
C- in algebra, A+ in coolology. See, popularity is complicated, yo. You have to spend a lot of time thinking about liking. You have to really like being liked, and also sort of like being disliked.
Colin listened intently, nibbling the inside of his thumb. Listening to Lindsay talk about popularity made him feel a little bit of the mysterium tremendum.
Anyway, she went on, I need to find out what's going on with her selling land. That guy Marcus built this cookie-cutter house subdivision south of Bradford. I mean, it's vomitous. Hollis would never stand for that shit.
Oh, okay, Colin said, feeling a bit like a pawn.
And reason three, Lindsay said, is I gotta teach you how to shoot so you don't embarrass yourself.
Shoot a gun?
A shotgun. I put one in your trunk this afternoon.
Colin nervously glanced toward the back.
It won't bite, Lindsay said. Where did you get a gun? Where did I get it? Smarty pants, getting a gun in Gutshot, Tennessee is easier than getting chlamydia from a hooker.
20 minutes later, they were sitting in a grassy field on the edge of a thick forested area that Lindsay said belonged to Hollis but would soon belong to Marcus. The field, overgrown with wildflowers and the occasional tree sapling, was nonetheless fenced in by an interweaving series of chopped logs.
Why is there a fence? Used to be we had a horse named Hobbit that grazed here, but then he died.
He was your horse?
Yep. Well, Hollis's too. Hollis got him from my father as a wedding present, and then when I was born, 6 months later, Hollis gave him to me. He was the gentlest horse, Hobbit. I could ride him from the time I was 3.
So are your parents divorced?
No, not officially. But you know what they say about Gutshot. The population never goes up and never goes down, because every time a woman gets pregnant, a man leaves town.
Colin laughed.
He left when I was 1. He calls a couple of times a year, but Hollis never makes me talk to him. I don't know the guy, and I don't really care to. How about you?
My parents are still married. I have to call them the same time every night, in 30 minutes, actually. They're overprotective, I guess, but normal. We're really boring.
You're not boring. You've got to stop saying that, or people will start believing you. Now, about the gun.
Lindsay jumped up and ran back across the field and hurdled the fence. Colin followed her at a more sustainable pace. He did not, as a rule, believe in running.
Pop the trunk,
Lindsay shouted. Colin unlocked the trunk and found a long, double-barreled shotgun with a stained wooden handle. Lindsay picked up the gun, handed it to Colin, and said, "Point it at the sky." She grabbed a square paper box, and then they marched back over the fence and across the field. Looking like an expert, Lindsay cracked open the gun, pulled two cylindrical shells from the paper box, and inserted them. "When this shit is loaded, you don't point it at me, hear?" She snapped the gun shut, held it up to her shoulder, and then carefully handed it over to Colin. She moved behind him and helped him hold the gun against his shoulder. He could feel her breasts against his shoulder blades, her feet by his feet, her stomach against his back. "Tuck it tight against your shoulder," she said, and he did. "The safety's here," she said, reaching up and guiding his hand to a steel switch on the side of the gun. He'd never held a gun before. It felt simultaneously exciting and deeply wrong. "Now, when you shoot it," she said, her breath against the nape of his neck, "you don't pull the trigger. You just reach in there and you squeeze it. Just squeeze it softly. I'm going to take a step back, and then you just squeeze, okay?" "What should I aim at?" "You couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, so just aim straight ahead." Colin felt the absence of Lindsay on his back, and then he ever so softly squeezed the trigger. The blast hit his ears at the same moment it hit his right shoulder, and the force of the gun caused his arm to pull up and his legs to fall out from under him, and he found himself sitting on his ass in a field of wildflowers with the gun pointing to the sky. "Well," he said, "that was fun." Lindsay was laughing. "See, that's why we're here, so you don't fall on your ass in front of Colin and Chase and everybody. You've got to learn to prepare for that kick." And so, over the course of the next hour, Colin shot the holy living hell out of the oak trees before him, pausing only to reload the gun and call his parents. He shot 44 shells into the forest, and then, when his right arm was numb and he felt like he'd been punched repeatedly in the shoulder by a champion boxer, he said, "Why don't you try?" Lindsay shook her head and sat down on the grass. Colin followed her down. "Oh, I don't shoot guns. I'm terrified of them," she said. "Are you shitting me?" "No. Plus, that's a 10-gauge. I wouldn't shoot a 10-gauge for $1,000. They kick like a goddamn mule." "Then why did... Like I said, I don't want you to look like a pussy." Colin wanted to continue the conversation, but didn't quite know how, and so he lay back and rubbed his sore shoulder. On the whole, Gutshot had been physically unkind to him. A puffy scar above his eye, 44 distinct shoulder bruises, and of course, a still painful gaping hole in his gut. And yet, somehow, he liked the place. He noticed that she was lying next to him, her arms crossed beneath her head. She kicked at his shin playfully to get his attention. "What?" he asked. "I was thinking about this girl you love so much," she said, "and this place I love so much, and how that happens, how you can just fall into it. This land Hollis is selling, the thing about it is, well, I'm partly mad because I don't want there to be some bullshit McMansion subdivision up there, but also partly because my secret hideout is up there."
"Your what?"
"My secret hideout. My super incredibly top secret location that no one on Earth knows about."
Lindsay paused and turned her head away from the star-struck sky and toward Colin.
"You want to see it?"
The end of the middle.
"I don't want to flatter myself," said Catherine the First in between sips of coffee at Café Sel Marie, "but it does feel a little special that it all began with me."
"Well," said Colin, who was drinking milk with a shot of coffee in it,
"there's three ways to look at it. Either, one, it's a massive coincidence that all the girls I ever liked happened to share the same 9 letters, or two, I just happened to think it a particularly beautiful name, or three, I never got over our 2.5-minute relationship."
"You were very cute then, you know," she said. She blew on the coffee through pursed lips.
"I remember thinking that.
You were dork chic before dork chic was chic."
"I'm leaning toward explanation 3 at the moment." He smiled. Dishes clattered around them. The place was crowded. He could see into the kitchen, where their waiter was smoking a long, thin cigarette.
I think maybe you try to be odd on purpose. I think you like that. It makes you you and not someone else.
You sound like your father, he said, referencing Crazy Keith.
I have found you insanely attractive since I saw you when I was freaking out about my French test, she answered. She didn't blink, didn't let go of his stare. Those eyes as blue as the sky ought to be. And then she smiled. Do I sound like my father now?
Yeah, weirdly enough, he also sucks at French.
She laughed. Colin saw the waiter put out his cigarette, and then he came over to their table and asked if they wanted anything more. Catherine the First said no, and then she turned to Colin and said, Do you know anything about Pythagoras?
And Colin said, I know his theorem.
And she said, No, I mean the guy. He was weird. He thought everything could be expressed numerically, that, like, math could unlock the world. I mean, everything.
What, like, even love? Colin asked, only vaguely annoyed that she knew something he didn't.
Particularly love, Catherine the First said. And you've taught me enough French for me to say 10-5 space 16-5 14-19-5 space 17-21-5 space 10-6 space 20-1-9-13-5.
For a long time, Colin stared at her wordlessly.
He cracked the code pretty quickly, but he stayed silent, trying to figure out when she'd come up with it, when she'd memorized it. Even he couldn't have translated French letters to Arabic numerals that quickly. Je pense que je t'aime, she'd said numerically. I think that I like you. Or, I think that I love you. The French verb aimer has two meanings, and that's why he liked her and loved her. She spoke to him in a language that, no matter how hard you studied it, could not be completely understood. He stayed quiet until he had a fully formulated response, one that would keep her interest alive without quite satiating it. Colin Singleton, let it be said, couldn't play the ninth inning of a relationship to save his life, but he could damn well score in the first.
You're just saying that because I'm on a TV show that no one watches, he said.
Maybe. Or maybe, he said, you're saying it because you're flattered I've spent 8 years of my life chasing after the 9 letters in your name. Maybe, she allowed. And then Colin's phone rang. His mom. Their sneak out was over. But by then, it was too late. In his mind, Catherine the First was already becoming Catherine the 19th. She would soon retake the throne that, all along, had rightfully been hers. Chapter 14. The thing about your stories, Lindsay was saying in the darkness as they approached the forest in front of them, is that they still don't have any morals, and you can't do a good girl voice, and you don't really talk enough about everyone else. The story's still about you. But anyway, I can imagine this Catherine now, a little bit. She's clever, and she's just a little mean to you. I think you get off on that. Most guys do. That's how I got Colin, really. Katrina was hotter and wanted him worse. They'd been dating for a while when he fell for me. But she was too easy. I know she's my friend and possibly Hassan's girlfriend and whatever, but Katrina's easier than a 4-piece jigsaw puzzle. Colin laughed, and Lindsay went on talking.
Getting people to like you is so easy, really. It's a wonder more people don't do it.
It's not so easy for me.
Whatever, I like you, and I never really like anybody. Hassan likes you, and I can tell that he never really likes anybody either. You just need more people who don't like people.
You don't ever really like anybody? They passed into the woods, following a narrow, periodically invisible trail. Lindsay motioned toward the trees and said,
You sure shot the holy hell out of this forest, smarty pants. Wouldn't that be something if you bagged a hog?
I don't really want to kill a pig, Colin noted. He had read Charlotte's Web, see? Then he repeated himself.
You don't ever really like anybody? Well, that's an exaggeration, I guess, she answered. It's just that I learned a while ago that the best way to get people to like you is not to like them too much.
Well, but you care about a lot of people. The Oldsters? Colin offered.
Well, the Oldsters are different, she said, and then stopped walking and turned around to Colin, who was already out of breath as he struggled up the hill behind her. The thing about the Oldsters, I think, is that they never screwed with me, so I don't worry about them. So, yeah, Oldsters and babies are the exceptions.
They walked in silence for a long time through dense, flat brush, with thin trees rising straight and high all around them. The trail became increasingly steep, zigzagging up the hill, until they finally came to a rocky outcropping, perhaps 15 feet high, and Lindsay Lee Wells said, "Now comes the rock climbing."
This is the end of disc number 4. Please continue listening on disc number 5. This is disc number 5.
They walked in silence for a long time through dense, flat brush, with thin trees rising straight and high all around them. The trail became increasingly steep, zigzagging up the hill, until they finally came to a rocky outcropping, perhaps 15 feet high, and Lindsay Lee Wells said,
"Now comes the rock climbing."
Colin looked up at the craggy face of the stone. There are probably people who can successfully negotiate their way up that rock, he thought, but I am not one of them. "No way," he said. She turned back toward him, her cheeks flushed and glistening with sweat. "I'm kidding." She scampered up a wet, mossy boulder and Colin followed. Immediately, he saw a narrow, chest-high crack covered over by a spider web.
"See, I'm taking you here because you're the only guy I know who's skinny enough. Squeeze on through," she said.
Colin pushed the spider web aside. "Sorry, Charlotte." He turned sideways, crouched down, and inched away from the fading light outside. Soon, he was completely blind, his knees and back and head all against the rock, and for a moment he panicked, thinking Lindsay had tricked him and would leave him wedged in here. But he kept shuffling his feet forward. Something glided against his back. He screamed.
"Relax, it's me," she said.
Her hands found his shoulders, and she said,
"Take one more step."
And then he could no longer feel the rock pressing in on him. She turned him so that he was facing forward.
"Keep walking," she said. "You can stand up straight now."
And then her hands disappeared, and he heard her sweeping at the ground, and she said,
"I keep a flashlight here, but I can't got it."
She pressed the flashlight into his hands, and he fumbled with it, and then the world lit up.
"Wow," said Colin.
Approximately square, the cave's only room was big enough to lie down comfortably in any direction, although the gray-brown ceiling sloped down toward the back, making it hard to stand in a lot of places. It contained a blanket, a sleeping bag, several old throw pillows, and one unmarked mason jar filled with some sort of liquid. He nudged it with his foot.
"Booze,"
Lindsay explained.
"Where'd you get it?" "There's a guy out in Danville who makes corn whiskey moonshine. No shit. And he'll sell it to you if you've got $10 and are old enough to walk. Colin gave it to me. I told him I drank it, but really I brought it out here because it adds ambiance."
Colin moved the flashlight slowly around the cave's walls.
"Sit down,"
Lindsay said,
"and turn off the light."
And then it was the kind of dark your eyes never adjust to.
"How'd you find this place?" "I was just hiking around. I used to love walking through Mom's land with all the oldsters when I was little. I started coming by myself during middle school, and I just stumbled across it one day in 8th grade. I must have walked past this rock 100 times without ever noticing anything. It's weird talking to you. I can't see you at all."
"I can't see you either."
"We're invisible. I've never been here with someone else. It's different being invisible with someone."
"So what do you do here?"
"What do you mean?"
"Well, it's too dark to read. I guess you could get a headlamp or something, but other than that..."
"No, I just sit here. When I was a nerd, I came here to be somewhere where no one would find me. And now, I don't know, I guess the same reason." "Do you want to drink it, the moonshine?"
"I never really drank before."
"Color me surprised."
"Also, moonshine can make you blind, and what I've seen of blindness so far hasn't really impressed me."
"Yeah, that would suck for you if you couldn't read anymore. But how often are you going to find yourself in a cave with moonshine? Live a little,"
says the girl who never wants to leave her hometown.
"Oh, burn." "Okay, I got the bottle.
Talk to me, and I'll come over to your voice.
Hello, my name is Colin Singleton, and it's very dark, and so you should come over here to my voice, except
the acoustics in this place are really Oh, that's me. That's my knee.
Hi.
Hi.
Ladies first.
All right. Sweet holy shit stickers! It tastes like you're washing down a bite of corn with a pint of lighter fluid.
Did it make you go blind?
I have absolutely no idea. Okay, your turn. Oh, wow, man, it's like French kissing a dragon.
That's the funniest thing you've ever said, Colin Singleton.
I used to be funnier. I kind of lost all my confidence.
Let me tell you a story.
Ooh, a Lindsay Lee Wells story. Does it star an archduke?
No, it stars a Lindsay, but it's got all the elements of a top-notch story. Where are you? Oh, there. Hi. Hi, knee. Hi, calf. Okay, so we all went to Danville for elementary school, and pretty much all the gutshot kids stuck together because everyone else thought we were dirty and poor and spread lice. But then, in about third grade, like I've said, I was ugly, Colin and all his friends started saying I was a dog. I hate that. I hate kids like that so bugging much. Rule number one, no interrupting. But anyway, so they started calling me Lass, short for Lassie.
Hey, he called you that just the other day on the way to the Oldsters.
Yeah, I recall. Also, to repeat myself, rule number one. So, it's fourth grade, okay, and it's Valentine's Day. I really wanted to get some Valentines. So I asked Hollis what I should do, and she said I should just make a Valentine for everyone in the class, and then people would respond. So Hollis bought a bunch of these Charlie Brown Valentines, and I wrote one for every kid in the class, even though my handwriting wasn't very good, and it took me a shit long time. And then, predictably, I didn't get any Valentines. So then I went home, and I was really upset, but I didn't want to tell Hollis about it. So I just sat in the chair by the window in my room and felt so just horrible. I don't even want to think about it. And then I see Colin running up to my house with a little cardboard box. And he's the cutest boy in school and the only one from Gutshot who's popular. He puts the box on my doorstep and then rings the doorbell and runs off. And I run down there and my heart's beating like crazy. And I'm so hopeful that he's got this secret crush on me. And I get down there and there's this really elaborately decorated cardboard box with red construction paper hearts pasted all over it. God, I hadn't thought about this in so long till he called me Lass.
Wait, what was in the box?
Alpo. A can of Alpo. But I got him in the end, because now he dates that dog.
Wow. Jesus Christ.
What?
Nothing, just, you know, I thought my romantic relationships were fucked up.
Anyway, it became my life's goal to get him. To kiss him, to marry him. I can't explain it, but it did.
And you did it.
I did. And he's different now. I mean, we were eight. We were little kids. He's sweet now, very protective and everything.
Do you ever wonder whether people would like you more or less if they could see inside you?
I mean, I've always felt like the Catherines dump me right when they start to see what I look like from the inside.
Well, except K-19.
But I always wonder about that. If people could see me the way I see myself, if they could live in my memories, would anyone love me? Well, he doesn't love me now. We've been dating for 2 years and he's never once said it. But he would really not love me if he could see inside. Because he's so real about everything. I mean, you can say a lot of shit about Colin, but he is completely himself. He's going to work in that factory his whole life, and he's going to have the same friends, and he's really happy with that, and he thinks it matters. But if he knew...
What?
Finish that sentence. I'm full of shit. I'm never myself. I've got a southern accent around the Oldsters. I'm a nerd for graphs and deep thoughts around you. I'm Miss Bubbly Pretty Princess with Colin. I'm nothing. The thing about chameleoning your way through life is that it gets to where nothing is real. Your problem is, how did you say it, that you're not significant?
Don't matter. I don't matter.
Right, matter. Well, but at least you can get to the part where you don't matter. Things about you and things about Colin and things about Hassan and Katrina are either true or they aren't true. Katrina is bubbly. Hassan is hilarious, but I'm not like that. I'm what I need to be at any moment to stay above the ground but below the radar. The only sentence that begins with I that's true of me is I'm full of shit.
Well, I like you, and you aren't chameleoning in front of me. I just figured that out. Like, you bite your thumb in front of me, which is a private habit, but you do it in front of me because I don't count as public. I'm at your secret hiding place. You're okay with me seeing inside you a little. A little, maybe.
Because I pose no threat. I'm a dork.
No, you're not. That's...
No, I am, and that's why.
Maybe. I never thought about it.
I don't mean to sound judgmental about it. It's just interesting.
I'm not threatened by you either, because I never liked popular people before.
But you're not really like them. It's more like you found a way to hijack their cool. That's aut...
Hi.
Hi.
We shouldn't.
Well, you started it.
Right, but I started it just so that I could say, we shouldn't, really dramatically.
Huh.
We should leave it at our foreheads touching and our noses touching and your hand on my leg, and we shouldn't, you know?
Your breath smells like booze.
Your breath smells like you just made out with a dragon.
Hey, that's my joke.
Sorry. Had to diffuse tension.
What are you doing?
Biting my goddamn thumb. My private habit.
They finally left the cave well after dark, but the moonlight was so bright, Colin found himself blinking it away. It was an awkward and largely quiet hike down the hill to the car. From there, they drove back to the Pink Mansion. They had just pulled into the driveway when Lindsay said,
I mean, of course I like you and you're great, but let's just... It's just not to be.
And he nodded, because he couldn't have a girlfriend without a finished theorem. And anyway, she was a Lindsay. They opened the door quietly, hoping not to disturb Hollis's work/QVC watching. The moment Colin closed the door, the phone rang.
Hello,
he heard Hollis say from inside the kitchen. Lindsay grabbed Colin then and pulled him over against the wall where they could listen without being seen.
Well, leave it out for the garbage men then, Hollis said. What a bunch of bullshit! They can't charge you to pick up trash. That's why we pay taxes. Well, I'm sorry, Roy, but that's bullshit. No, we can't afford it, believe me. No, absolutely not. Well, I don't know, Roy. No, I understand the problem. Hold on. I'm thinking, Christ, my daughter's going to be home any second. What about the field back there? We own that field, right? Yeah, exactly. All you need is a goddamn bulldozer and a forklift. Well, I don't like it either, but unless you've got another idea... Fine. I'll see you on Thursday.
The phone clanked against the receiver.
Hollis, Lindsay whispered, owes a shitload of money to the swear jar.
Then she led Colin through the hall and into the game room.
Out the window,
she whispered. Colin raised the slim window facing the front yard as quietly as he could and then motioned to the screen. He would have said something about the screen, but he knew he couldn't whisper.
Christ, it's like you've never snuck out of a house before, Lindsay whispered.
She pressed at the corners of the screen and then lifted it up. She squirmed out head first, her skinny legs kicking slightly as she did a somersault onto the front lawn. Colin followed, feet first, trying a kind of limbo strategy that looked ridiculous. Having successfully sneaked out of the house, Lindsay and Colin brushed themselves off, ambled to the front door, and opened it.
Hollis! Lindsay called. We're home!
Hollis was seated on the couch, a pile of papers in her lap. She turned to them and smiled.
Hey!
Hollis said, all trace of anger gone from her voice.
Did y'all have fun?
Lindsay looked at Colin and not at Hollis.
"I've rarely had so much fun in my life," she said. "I'll bet," said Hollis, who didn't seem to be listening.
It was the warehouse.
Colin spoke softly, conspiratorially, as they climbed the stairs.
"She goes to the warehouse on Thursdays."
Lindsay smirked.
"Yeah, I know. You've lived here 3 weeks. I've lived here 17 years. I don't know what's going on, but between that and selling land and always being in a furious phone conversation whenever we show up at the house, I'm starting to think a road trip might be in order," said Lindsay.
"They can solve a surprising number of problems, road trips," Colin acknowledged.
"Road trip? Did somebody say road trip?"
Hassan stood at the top of the staircase.
"Because I'm in. So is Katrina. She's a college student, you know. I'm dating a college girl.
She's getting her clinical nursing assistant license at Danville Community,"
Lindsay said dismissively.
"That's college, that's all I'm saying."
"And to think, Singleton, you thought I'd never get a college girl unless I went to college."
"How was the date?" Colin asked.
"Sorry, dude, can't talk about it. My lips are too numb from all the kissing. That girl kisses like she wants to suck out your soul."
Colin sneaked into Hassan's room immediately after Lindsay went downstairs to bed, and they discussed Hassan's situation, second base over the shirt. And then Colin told him about Lindsay, minus the secret hideout, because it seemed private.
"I mean," Colin said, "it was dark, and our whole faces were touching except our lips. She just brought her head against mine all of a sudden."
"Well, do you like her?"
I don't know. At that moment, I kinda did."
"Dude, think about it. If you could make your theorem work, you could predict how it would go."
Colin smiled at the thought.
"Now, more than ever, you have to finish."
Chapter 15. The next few days were slightly awkward with Lindsay. She and Colin remained friendly, but it was all so superficial, and Colin felt like they ought to be talking about the big issues of mattering and love and capital T truth and Alpo, but they only talked about the mundane business of taking oral histories. The sly jokes were gone. Hassan complained repeatedly that,
"All of a sudden, I've got to pull all the funny weight in this family."
But slowly, things returned to status quo. Lindsay had a boyfriend, and Colin had a broken heart and a theorem to finish. Also, Hassan had a girlfriend, and they were all preparing for a pig hunt. So, then again, things weren't entirely normal. The day before his inaugural feral hog hunt, Colin Singleton prepared the only way Colin Singleton would, by reading. He scanned through 10 volumes of Foxfire books for information about the habits and habitat of the feral hog. Then he Googled feral pig, from which he learned that wild pigs were so widely disliked that the state of Tennessee pretty much allowed you to shoot one whenever you came across it. The feral pig is considered a pest animal, and as such is not subject to protections afforded, say, a deer or a person. But it was in Hollis's copy of a book called Our Southern Highlands that Colin found the most descriptive passage regarding the wild hog. Anybody can see that when he, the hog that is not rooting or sleeping, he is studying devilment. He shows remarkable understanding of human speech, especially profane speech, and even an uncanny gift of reading men's thoughts, whenever those thoughts are directed against the peace and dignity of pigship. This, clearly, was not an enemy to take lightly. Not that Colin intended to take any action against the peace and dignity of pigship. In the extremely unlikely event that he even came across a hog, he figured he'd allow it to study devilment in peace, which was how he justified not mentioning the hog hunt to his parents during their nightly phone conversation. He wasn't really going on a hunt, anyway. He was going for a stroll through the woods. With a gun. He awoke to his alarm the morning of the hunt at 4:30. It was the first time since arriving in Gutshot that he'd beaten the rooster to waking. Immediately, he opened his bedroom window, pressed his face up against the screen, and shouted,
"Cock-a-doodle-doo! How do you like it from the other end, you little fugger?"
He brushed his teeth and then got in the shower. He kept the water coldish so as to wake up. Hassan came in to brush his teeth and shouted over the running water,
"Kafir, I can say it with confidence. Today is a day that no pigs will die. I'm not even allowed to eat the motherfuckers. I'm sure not going to kill one."
"Amen," Colin answered. Eating pork is haram in Islam. It is also forbidden in Judaism, but A, Colin was only half Jewish, and B, he wasn't religious. They were in the hearse with Lindsay and Princess in the back seat by 5.
"Why the dog?" asked Hassan.
"Chase and Fulton like to use her when they're hunting. She doesn't do a lick of good. Poor Princess cares more about her curls than tracking pigs, but they enjoy it."
They drove a couple of miles past the store and then turned off onto a gravel road that wound up a small hill through thick foliage.
"Hollis hasn't sold this land," she complained, "because everybody likes it."
The road dead-ended into a long, narrow, one-story wooden house. Two pickup trucks and Jat's Blazer were already parked by the lodge. Tuck and Jat, whose jeans were again too tight, sat on the tailgate of one pickup, their legs dangling. Across from them, a middle-aged man was seated in what appeared to be a plastic chair stolen from a third-grade classroom, examining the muzzle of his shotgun. They all wore camouflage pants, long-sleeved camouflage shirts, and bright orange vests. As the man turned to speak to them, Colin recognized him as Townsend Lyford, one of the people they'd interviewed at the factory.
"How are y'all?" he said as they got out.
He shook hands with Colin and Hassan, then hugged Lindsay.
"Pretty day for hunting hogs," said Mr. Lyford.
"It's a little early," Colin said, but by then light was just reaching the hillside. The sky was clear, and it did promise to be pretty, if hot. Katrina peeked her head out from the lodge's front door and said,
"Breakfast is on. Oh, hey, cutie."
Hassan winked at her. "You're a smooth cat," Colin grinned. Once Colin and Hassan were inside the lodge, Socked handed them each camouflage outfits, complete with ridiculous bright orange vests.
"Y'all change in the bathroom," he said.
And by bathroom, Socked meant outhouse. On the upside, the stench of the lodge's outhouse masked the smell of the camouflage clothes, which reminded Colin of all the worst parts of the Coleman School's gym. Still, he kicked off his shorts and slipped into the pants, the shirt, and the crossing guard orange vest. Before leaving the outhouse, Colin emptied out his pockets. Fortunately, the camo pants had huge cargo pockets, plenty of room for his wallet, his car keys, and the mini recorder, which he'd taken to carrying everywhere. Once Hassan had changed too, everyone settled down on one of the homemade benches, and Mr. Lyford stood up. He spoke with a thick accent and with authority. Mr. Lyford really seemed to enjoy placing emphasis on his words.
"The feral pig is an extremely dangerous creature. It is called the poor man's grizzly bear, and not for nothing. Now, I hunt without dogs, choosing instead to stalk my prey as the Indians did. But Chase and Fulton, they're dog hunters, and that's all right, too.
Either way, though, we must remember this is a dangerous sport."
"Right," Colin thought. "We have guns and the pigs have snouts. Dangerous indeed."
"These pigs are pests. Even the government says so, and they need to be eradicated. Now, usually I would say you're going to have trouble rooting out a feral pig in the daytime, but it's been a while since we hunted around here, so I think we have an excellent chance. Now, I'm going to go out with Colin and Hassan, and we're going to go down into the flatland and see if we can't catch a trail. Y'all can split up as you wish, but be safe out there, and do not take the dangers of the feral pig lightly."
"Can we shoot him in the nuts?" asked Jat.
"No, you cannot. A feral boar will charge if shot in the testes," answered Mr. Lyford.
"Jesus, Daddy's kidding. We know how to hunt," said Talk.
Before that, Colin didn't realize Talk and Mr. Lyford were related.
"Well, boy, I reckon I'm nervous sending you out alone with a bunch of yahoos."
Then he went over some boring stuff about guns, like which slugs to use in your shotgun, and to always keep both barrels loaded. It turned out that Lindsay and Tuck were going out together to a tree stand near a baited patch